And welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, your host. With us today is our good friend Gordon T. Long, a noted economist and economic expert. Gordon, can always count on you to dig beneath the numbers and figure out what the heck is really going on, and job numbers and layoffs and all this. And yet we get these stellar job reports. What on earth is really going on here?
Oh, well, thanks for having me back, Kerry. It's always always great to talk to you. Yeah, we get the new labor numbers on this Friday, so that'll be a big tell. But the last month's labor numbers, we created apparently 517,000 new jobs, which was an 8-sigma deviation from standard. So I noticed that J.P. Morgan and many others were screaming about they couldn't make sense out of them. And, you know, I look at this stuff, as you just said, and pretty detailed. And I'm telling you, you can manipulate numbers, but they always show in some way. They can't line them all up. And these ones were almost hard to make out this month. Here's what they did. The numbers were so big, it reversed the whole feelings towards whether the Fed was going to pivot and how soon.
That was the purpose.
Got charts in our newsletter that just show it abruptly changed and went shooting straight up. But after the labor numbers came out last month, then the CPI numbers came out, and then the PPI numbers came out, and all of a sudden we've taken out they're going to stop raising rates. Now they're talking about 50 rate points next time, but whether it's just 25, 25, 25, but the point is a continuation, because the financial conditions index, which the Fed is responsible for, was showing loose monetary conditions, loose, even though the quantitative tightening is tightening, we're increasing rates. In other words, people around the world did not believe the Fed and were buying into it, shorting treasuries and expecting the yields to go up. Well, at least now they're expecting them to go up. So
the Fed breathing room, is that what the purpose was?
One of the things that I've really noticed is we have to remember that Yellen, our Treasury Secretary, who was a former chairman of the Fed, and then we have Jerome Powell, who used to be the Assistant Treasury Secretary of the Treasury. They both know each other's jobs extremely well, and they play very, very close together. So that Yellen's busy with, you know, we have the debt ceiling, but using the Treasury General account to, as she's able to put liquidity into the market by the government of the money coming out of the TGA. But at the same time, she's not issuing anything other than short-term bills. She can't, legally, she can't put notes and bonds out there. So there's shorting of a supply. So by her playing this one way, And then playing some games with the labor numbers, the CPI, because, you know, that's a whole discussion in the CPI and the PPI and even the PSE, that's the Fed's measurement. They're really pushing a false narrative. That's the bottom line of it. I meant PCE, by the way, when I said that, the Fed's
consumption
PCE.
Expenditures, right?
Yeah, personal consumption expenditure. That's the one from the Fed, which on Friday blew the lid off it. Again, too high. The inflation rate, inflation is month over month, is still increasing. Or if it's flat, then it goes up. It's not coming down. It's not coming down anywhere near. So inflation is still with us. It will come down, Kerry, but it's becoming very clear that we'll be lucky if we can get it down to 4%. This 2% target is not possible. My opinion is we're going to see a normal of maybe 4%, and that's what they're really targeting at right now. But they remember, financial repression is negative real rates. And right now, when you've got inflation running, you know, 6.5%, and you've got the Treasury bond trading just below 4%, you're going to, you know, that's 2.5% negative. That's the best thing you can do in debasing the national debt, right? That's just out. Usually you have to hide it, so people don't really notice it. And that's what we've done over the last numbers of years. And but we've run that that negative rate, negative real rate on the 10-year down around as low as 1.2 negative, maybe 0.8. That's been the game. So this is working for the Fed. They'll drag it out, and they want to drag it out as long as possible. Sorry, didn't mean to get long-winded there.
It's okay. So it's all a ploy, then. It's all a game, right?
Got to be really careful with the numbers. And it's every government around the world massages their data. That's just a fact. It's not, there's nothing unique to the United States. You just got to make sure you're really looking at good, solid data, and you go through the details, because then you can see what numbers are realistically there. But you, we're clearly, our numbers, I just put out a newsletter, our free weekly newsletter. I need to say that to your listeners. It's available free by just signing up at our site. And we go, and I think you get it, right, Kerry?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it, and we lay out things fairly detailed. And this week, you know, we really focused on what the housing is, one of the best leading indicators that there is out there. And typically when the housing starts to break within 10 months, you start to see a fall in profits. Or so specifically, if your existing home sales, and you put them against the 6 months, a trailing 12-month change in earnings per share, in 10 months, you start to see it fall. The same thing as if you see housing investments start to drop below 20%, you enter into a recession. And those are numbers from the BCA that they use those. If you take leading and coincident indicators as a spread, and you compare those, you'll see they track very much with unemployment. And the same with you, if you have an inversion in the yield curve, about 10 months other months out, you start to see unemployment showed up. Now, I just put a whole bunch of examples out there that we call a 10-month canary rule. And so if you go through and you track them, they all come converge about June. In June, all of these numbers say you should be in an era where all of a sudden unemployment is dropping, is going up dramatically. Layoffs are really starting to become noticeable, and we will start to be talking a recession and deflation in a bigger way. That clearly is there. But, you know, the Fed's trying to push it out. The longer they can get it out, the further they can bring those rates up, the more they can, when they take them down, it can have a bigger impact. That's what they're trying to, they're buying time for.
So they want to raise them so that they can cut them later? Is that, am I?
No, exactly. Well, they have to have the room to raise them, or lower them rather. And that's what they'll do. And it's the rate of lowering them. It's not the degree they take them down. It's how fast they take them down. It's that first derivative that's the big deal. And so that's what they really want to drive. It's why they drove them up so quickly, because it had more power. And also they want to buy a little bit more with the quantitative tightening. You know, we're taking out $90 billion every month right now. So we're down to 8.4 trillion. I think they would like to get it down a little closer to 8 trillion before they ramp it right back up, probably to 10 trillion again. Last point I'll make. Remember, we were talking in 2008, and all of a sudden the market just turned on a dime and it was off to the races. Well, what the hell happened? And we were pulling our hair out. Well, when we got inside it, they took something called mark to market, which is how you mark your derivative books in the banks. And they said, you don't have to do that anymore at the banks. Well, rent money we go, and the banks went on. We've never changed that. So they got 84 billion dollars, some of the major banks, three majors are all north of 80 billion in derivatives, so they marked to magic. Yeah. Still, even to this day. So
we used to call it mark to make believe, remember?
Exactly right. So when you get inside, you see all these games. The games that are being played now are in collateral. There's a big problem in collateral. That's the issue in the credit. And so they have concepts called rehypothecation, where the people are they're pyramiding this collateral, and then there's things called collateral transformations, and it just goes on and on. Again, back in 2008, we learned about all these things called credit default swaps and collateralized loan obligations, and what is all this magic? Remember when Enron blew up in 2000? Well, we've got a whole new world of these financial instruments and derivatives now that are just waiting to pop on us. And they did here a couple months ago in Britain. They almost brought down the UK government. Well, they did brought down the government, but they just destroyed the Bank of England had to come in to bail out the pound. And it was because of the derivatives that were being used in the pension system. They had to save the UK pension system. And it was because of the derivative structures they were using on their liabilities, a whole new concept. So that's what worries me the most. And it should worry a lot of your listeners, because it's there. It's happening. Now, what'll break it? That's speculation. How soon it is. We got some charts, but you don't know. Yellen and Powell need to buy more time.
Wow. So it's getting a little scary, eh?
Yes, it is. This is the time to be quite cautious. Because the world of investing, we're not investing anymore. We're speculating. And in many cases, outright gambling. Now, if you want to gamble, you want to speculate, go ahead. You can make a lot of money. But if you're an investor, and we're an investment shop, we don't do it unless all the spreadsheets all line up. They don't line, and then we lose money. So,
but we thought, but
unless you,
right?
we play the game of probabilities. And right now, the probabilities are against you. You're going into a casino where you know the house is going to win, but your chance of winning has been reduced because they want more profit.
Yeah, well, profit's the name of the game at any cost. You know, it just amazes me, the inflation, what's really happened, and what the government says. The government has acknowledged it's a really bad situation, but they aren't telling the half of it, are they?
No. One, they're hiding all the data. We've known that. Hedonic substitution, imputation, weightings, all those games that people like John Williams over at ShadowStat lay out. But again, they're taking it to new levels. But Kerry, you know, we did our thesis paper. We do an annual one here this year, and it was on stagflation. And we went through just gory numbers of the charts, but we took them all back to the First World War, and we overlaid all different elements of it. And what really came out to us is when you get inflation that's over 5%, for any period of time, and we haven't had that many times in our history, but when you do, it's like a shock to the system. It takes a while, but it breaks things. And then all of a sudden you start to see, you go into a real level of stagnation, which can lead and often leads to stagflation. And that's why we think we're in a, what we call a beta drought decade, this 10 years where it's really gonna be hard to make monies and assets. There will be some major counter rallies that will blow your socks off in this period. But nevertheless, the trend is down. But when we did these charts, the thing that we really saw, and it got back to what we were talking about earlier, was unemployment. And we're really setting ourselves up for the next issue that's going to cause a stagflation is unemployment. Of getting, and by unemployment, it's jobs that actually make a living wage that can support a family, because now we're cutting professionals, and will there be enough jobs? And we were talking about artificial intelligence and bots. These are getting highly sophisticated now, that can now replace writers and analysts and jobs that we couldn't touch before. Now we've known it's coming, but now it's coming in a wave. And you know, we're talking about chat. What is it? Chat GPT. Look at me, the 500. I think there was 500 million people signed, 500 million signed up, have already signed up. That's how quickly it just moved through the industry. But the last point I'd make on this Kerry, is we have to understand that the era of the great moderation has ended, and we've had 40 years where it's been a great 40 years, but the COVID was a shock to our system. And I mentioned the inflation levels. And so three things have really changed, if I can leave a message for your listeners, is that we had globalization. With three things that have changed is globalization, financialization, and mercantilism. And by that, I mean globalization, we will reduce costs. It drove costs down because of cheap labor in other countries and cheap commodities. It has reversed because now we're starting to see onshoring problems because of geopolitics, conflicts in the supply chains, and even the IMF is out warning it. So globalization has changed, and that was driving costs down. Financialization has been driving down interest rates from the 1980 era, where we are running 19% down to the zero bound. Well, now we're back up, and with 10 years, what this morning is just below 4%. We're now at higher interest rates, and we're going to see sustained higher interest rates, because what we're doing is the bond duration risk premiums are increasing and the equity risk premiums are increasing. So the interest rates themselves are going to have to absorb that. That's reverse. And in mercantilism, doesn't address the costs or the interest rates. It's about currencies. And that is where Japan first and China take all the money they have. They buy our bonds, at least they have been, which drove up the price of, which drove down the yields, drove up the price of the bonds. So it made every consumption possible, took our economy over 40 years to a 70% consumption economy. And because the bond rates were up, it also pushed the dollar. So the dollar has been extremely strong. Both of those are, all of those are now reversing. I didn't say they're going to plummet. They're just reversing. They're taking the foot off the accelerator. And so now we're in an era of stagnation and slowing, and it's going to be tighter. And because our valuations are so high, that, and the PEs have got to come down, and it, there's going to be opportunities to make a money. This is not meant to be a doom and gloom. It's just meant to be the fact that this is what's changing. This is why it seems so disruptive. And if you can see it that way, there's still a lot of money to be made. We hope. But when I look at things... But when I look at things like collapsing real disposable income that's down now $1 trillion from last year, it's like right off the chart. We've never seen real disposable income collapse like this since 1932, and it's getting no visibility, absolutely not, none.
So you think that we're really going to see stagflation here, or can we see a... collapse of the currency? What are you thinking here?
Kerry, that's really the million-dollar question. And in our thesis paper, it's going in stages, and it's going to take longer than we think. And it's going to take, we think, at least the rest of this decade to unfold. And it's going to be from stagnation right now, we're leading into stagflation, and that'll really be get into unemployment coming up, and because we'll have deflation and inflation at the same time in different areas. But we'll go into this stagflation area that we're already into right now. From there, the dollar itself has got some problems. It's not going to collapse, but it's weakening because of we've weaponized the dollar, which will lead to problems with debt. We know we have a massive debt issue, but the debt, I don't like to use the word debt crisis, but we have collateral and leverage problems that then are going to start to show themselves in a much bigger way. That's still out 2, maybe 3 years. Then from there, the reactions that we all see from governments as they will continue to print the money and they will change how they print the money. We'll get into hyperinflation, what everybody's really concerned about of a fiat currency collapse. But there's so much more that the government will do, we concluded as we went through it. And that is there's already the beginnings of a shift from where the Federal Reserve was in charge of credit. And it's through credit that we really issue that money is created. And they've pushed it to the limit. They'll still increase it. But now it's got to be more fiscal expansion. And I'm not talking about things like MMT. I'm talking about the regulatory state, if I can call that, the government, bigger governments. This is not about the United States. It's about most of the Western world. Now, to be able to get the kind of growth they need to support interest rates that may be up in the 4% kind of range, they're going to have to get the economy going. And how do they do it? We can't grow credit fast enough. And the way we believe that they're going to do it, and this comes back from my financial repression days, where I guess we first met, is that we think that they're going to start using off-balance sheet things like collateralized or collateralized debt. And so that whole process itself is where the government the government guarantees loans. It doesn't print the money. It doesn't issue new currency. It guarantees loans. It's the same way as we issue foreign credit today, foreign aid. We don't give the country money. We guarantee the loan they take at an American bank, and it only becomes a problem for us if they default on it. It's called contingent liability accounting. So what we will be using, and you're familiar with that, we will be using, because you don't have to, it's not on the balance sheet. It doesn't show up in the government's balance sheet. It doesn't show up in the Fed's. So they will use contingent liabilities to be able to guarantee it. A lot of these zombie corporations are going to see, we believe, within two, three years, this kind of uses. Politicians always gravitate to an easy solution. This one's too easy. This is absolutely too easy. And this is how probably the kinds of way they're going to get out from under the entitlement program. And I didn't mean to get in. That's a huge discussion, Kerry, but we spent a lot of time working that one through to kind of know where the investments are going to be.
Well, you know,
any questions on that? I didn't mean to go off again.
One thing we talk about a lot, we have in the past, is autos and that bubble.
Yes.
That seems ready to finish off here. You know, I'm just curious what the latest, your latest research is on that.
It is. We haven't been following it as closely because there really haven't been real problems in defaults and foreclosure. Well, a lot of forbearances and foreclosures and on delinquency. So they are now rising fairly aggressively, but still are not too worrisome yet. What really showed up to us, and I was mentioning it, is there are so many vehicles out there now that because they've been rolling over used and the rates, they're paying over $1,000 a month on payments for a vehicle. And these are often they're the big Ford 150s, et cetera. Some of these were going over $100,000. So these it seems ridiculous that they should be at these kinds of levels, somebody paying this amount of money for a vehicle payment per month. But those are the ones now that are in the subprime market, and those are the ones that are now delinquents. And so the repo guys are all over these now. As soon as they're even 30 days, they're on the phone. And if 60 days, they don't even wait to the traditional 90 and et cetera. They're out there repoing them. That is telling you, one, maybe they learned from 2008, but how tight they're going to get. But as we start to see more of the delinquencies where you're over 90 days arrears, these repos are going to be grabbing as fast as possible. And I've noticed the tow trucks today. You'd appreciate it. All say they don't say towing. They say towing and on repossession. Or to make other kinds of words, but their big business is not work doing towing during the day. They're doing repossessions from midnight to 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning. That's why you don't see them. But that's what we know. That's what we're noticing. That's the beginnings. That's the tell. You know that from your previous days.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think we've covered a lot of topics. Gordon, just tell us where we find you these days.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kerry. I distribute all my work through matasi.com, matasii.com. I do a weekly newsletter, fairly detailed, and a video every 2 weeks to kind of describe. We are investors, but we share this information with anybody who might be interested, with one caveat. We ask them to give us feedback or comments. There's a lot of professionals out there with a lot of experience, and we like their feedback when they look at it. Are we right, wrong, or what don't we understand?
All right, great point. Hey, we appreciate you coming on. If you've got a question for Gordon, shoot us an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. Make sure you sign up for a free newsletter. You'll get Gordon's info at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Just click the subscribe button. Gordon, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Kerry. Talk to you again.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.